The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Allen, and I'm joined by my colleagues, Judge Meredith and Judge Toth. We're convened today via teleconference to hear argument in the matter of James R. Healy versus Robert Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 18-6970. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please make your appearance for the record?
Your Honors, this is Bradley Hennings for appellant James R. Healy of the firm Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick. Joining me on the call is Zachary Stoltz, also of the firm.
Thank you, Mr. Hennings.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Mark Hamill for the Secretary, and with me is Deputy Chief Counsel James Cowden.
Thank you, Mr. Hamill. Mr. Hennings, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
Then we will make that happen, and you should feel free to begin whenever you're ready, Mr. Hennings.
Judge Allen, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. At the time Mr. Healy's claim for service-connected benefits for hypertension was denied, VA, including the board and the individual board member deciding the case, knew that the National Academy of Sciences had found limited or suggestive evidence of an association between herbicide exposure and hypertension. Because this study was discussed in the Federal Register and referenced Mr. Healy's exact diagnosis, and because the board's own manual tells the board that the NAS study is an indication of a possible link, this court should hold that the NAS updates were constructively in the record before the board at the time of its decision in this case, and remand the matter for an examination. In Eusebio, this court held that an appellant must show there is a direct relationship between the document and his or her claim to demonstrate that it was constructively before the board. Specifically, it must bear a closer relationship to the appellant beyond providing general information related to the type of disability on appeal. Such a direct relationship is present in this case. It's present here because the NAS updates specifically address the very disability at issue, hypertension, and provide a finding concerning a link between that specific disability and herbicide exposure. There's no dispute that Mr. Healy suffers from hypertension and was exposed to herbicides during service in Vietnam. Therefore, the NAS updates do have a direct relationship to Mr. Healy's claim. This case differs materially from Eusebio, where the NAS update cited in that case did not contain a conclusion concerning a link between herbicide exposure and the disability actually on appeal. Moreover, the NAS update regarding hypertension in this case was published in the Federal Register in 2014. Further, the Purple Book tells the board that it should get an exam in hypertension cases. So the Purple Book, which is the board's internal adjudication manual, is not just putting VA on notice, it's telling the board how to process the case. In the Purple Book, it says, in cases where presumptive or actual exposure to Agent Orange has been conceded, do not deny service connection for hypertension without first obtaining a VA medical opinion on the nexus element. It specifically provides that the NAS's finding of limited or suggestive evidence of a link between hypertension and herbicide exposure satisfies the third element in the McClendon test in adjudicating an individual veteran's claims. Moreover, 5 months earlier, the same board member, when presented with the same facts, recognized the NAS updates and remanded for an opinion on this theory of entitlement. In addition, this case differs from Monzingo, in which the reports at issue did not discuss a specific link between the claimed disability and the appellant service. Instead, like the NAS updates in Eusebio, the reports in Monzingo generally discussed hearing loss as it relates to military service. But here, the NAS updates provide more than a general discussion of hypertension as it relates to military service. They provide a specific discussion of hypertension as it relates to herbicide exposure in service, which is precisely what is at issue.
Mr. Hennings, this Judge Toth, so am I understanding your argument correctly, which it would be basically that anybody who was in Vietnam such that exposure was conceded would now automatically sort of satisfy the McClendon, like they would automatically get an exam for hypertension. Is that, am I following you?
Well, Your Honor, what we're asking is for the court to hold that the NAS studies are before the board, and so the board has an obligation to examine that and determine whether an examination is warranted. In our case, we believe that it is warranted for Mr. Healy.
Okay. Yeah. No. I'm tracking in the sense that one outcome, if let's say we agree on the constructive possession piece, would be that VA would have a duty, the board would have a duty to at least discuss it in every case. I'm wondering if we could also, I mean, if that necessarily, I guess you've read that language from the Purple Book as automatically sort of satisfying McClendon's third element.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, would it preclude, for instance, the VA? Because I'm asking, which is the NAS study. I mean, I'm not a scientist; I don't know anything about this. But just from the little takeaway I look at, it looks somewhat, I don't want to say inconclusive, but like it pulls in both directions, right? I mean,
yes,
the agency obviously relied on the study. It looks like in the past to deny placing hypertension on the presumptive list. But at least it suggests enough of a link, you know, that it may warrant an examination in an individual case. Here's what I'm asking. What if VA were to sort of change their position about maybe the significance of what the study means in terms of adjudicating cases?
Well, Your Honor, that could potentially change the approach that VA would have to take regarding these cases. There's also certainly, depending on the fact of an individual case, it may not indicate that there is a link. Perhaps there's other factors that is very clear that cause the veteran's hypertension, such that the issue is not reasonably raised. Even though there is a link, it's clear that the hypertension was caused by something else, in which case VA would not have to get an examination at that point.
Okay, right. And obviously, none of that would change whether it bears a direct relationship on the claim itself. It maybe just bears on the nature of that relationship.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. I would agree with that.
Okay. Thanks.
Going back to some differences with Monzingo, again, the NAS update here.
Mr. Henning,
yes, sir.
This is
yes, Your Honor.
Judge Allen. I'm sorry to jump in. I tried to be quicker to get in after Judge Toth. Can I take you back a little bit in your argument to Azubio? Just for a moment, take the fact that the Purple Book was in effect for this case when it wasn't for Azubio. Just take that fact out for a second.
Mm-hmm.
In Azubio, we held that the docket, this is a quote, the document must bear a closer relationship to the appellant beyond providing general information related to the type of disability on appeal. I'm having trouble, as you know, I dissented in Azubio, but it's the law. And I'm having trouble coming up with a reasoned basis to say that given that language that I just read, and ignoring the Purple Book for a moment, that this case is materially different given that language. So if that's where I'm starting, can you go back and try to convince me that I'm wrong?
Yes, Your Honor. I think there are three key differences, putting aside the Purple Book, which I think is significant. But the first key difference is that in Zebio, the disability on appeal was not directly referenced in the update, whereas in here, hypertension is directly referenced. Second, these updates were published in the Federal Register. The 2006 and 2012 updates were published in 2014, and so they were in the Federal Register prior to the case, which was not the case in Zebio. And finally, we have the same board member presented with the same facts 5 months earlier that did recognize the NAS updates. And so you know, I think all of those factors indicate that this is different from UZIP, you know, putting aside the influence of the Purple Book.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. The
Sorry to interrupt. This is Judge Meredith. I'd like to not put aside the Purple Book for a minute, if we could talk about that. As you know, in Overton, the court held that the board is required to discuss relevant provisions of the M21-1. I'm wondering if you could talk a little about whether the Purple Book, you see it as being akin to the manual provisions that were discussed in Overton, and whether there's some obligation on the board to discuss potentially relevant provisions in that book.
Yes, Your Honor. So the Purple Book was adopted in March 2018, and so it was in effect during Mr. Healy's board adjudication. And it's a document containing the board's internal policies and procedures. The board indicated that the adoption of this document is to ensure consistency and accountability in the handling of appeals throughout the board. So in part of the Purple Book, it talks about adjudicatory best practices, and that is the section where it talks specifically about hypertension and how to handle that with Agent Orange claims. Now, in Overton, the court indicated that the board is required to discuss any relevant provisions contained in the M21-1 as part of its duty to provide adequate reasons or bases. And we believe the same is true here. Although the Purple Book is indeed not binding upon the board, much like the M21 is not binding upon the board, because board members have qualified decisional independence, we believe that the board is required to discuss any relevant provision. And this is a relevant provision contained in the Purple Book, specifically addressing Mr. Healy's hypertension and his exposure to herbicide agents. In fact, in the Purple Book itself, it says the numbering system is based on that used in the Veteran Benefits Administration's M21-1 Adjudication Procedures Manual to allow for consistency in citation format. So for all intents and purposes, this is the board's equivalent of the M21. And so we believe that it should be treated accordingly under the law.
Regarding the specific, this is Judge Meredith again, the specific provision in the Purple Book that you've referenced, it's entitled Agent Orange Claims. The appellant here originally filed his claim as secondary service connection. It wasn't based on Agent Orange. Under what circumstances would the board have to look to this provision when the claim on its face may not be based on Agent Orange exposure? What circumstances would trigger them to have to discuss it in your view?
Well, you're right, Your Honor, Judge Meredith. Although Mr. Healy did not explicitly raise the theory of entitlement to service connection based on herbicide exposure, VA's duty to fully develop and adjudicate the claim is not limited to explicitly raised theories. The Federal Circuit talked about this in Schroeder v. West, and this court discussed it in Delisio. And the agency's duty to assist attaches to investigation of all possible in-service causes of the current disability, including those unknown to the veteran. So as the court said in Delisio, even if the claimant believes that his condition is related to service in a particular way, such as here, his claim is not limited to one theory. It's whether it's reasonably raised by the record or explicitly raised by the claimant. And in this case, we believe the NAS studies reasonably raised the issue of entitlement to service connection based upon herbicide exposure for Mr. Healy's hypertension.
You mentioned, this is Judge Meredith, you mentioned a minute ago that the Purple Book is not binding. If we were to conclude, essentially as you've requested, that the appellant here is entitled to an exam because he has conceded Agent Orange exposure and he's seeking service connection for a condition listed in the limiter suggested evidence category of the National Academy Report, wouldn't that be the equivalent of saying that the Purple Book is binding here? I mean, under what authority would we have to do that?
Well, Your Honor, I think I outlined for Judge Toth, there are circumstances where the board would not be required to get an examination, perhaps if it was not reasonably raised, perhaps if it was clear there was an alternative etiology for the veteran's hypertension. But since the board is not a medical body and cannot engage in its own medical determinations, I think in most cases, because the VA has recognized this in the Purple Book and the Federal Register, et cetera, I think in most cases, the board will have to get a medical examination opinion on whether herbicide agent exposure and hypertension are linked. In addition, the Secretary agrees that the updates findings
Mr.
should be...
Hennings, before you,
yes, this is
Judge Allen, before you move on, could I follow up on one of the questions that Judge Meredith asked you? This concerns Overton and the obligation to consider portions of the N21 and whether that would apply to the Purple Book. So I'm having a little trouble thinking about how that would work here because... You know, take Overton. It was the provision in the M21 that said certain harbors were not in, quote, in Vietnam when that mattered. And we said, well, the board just can't adopt that because it's not binding, and the board has got to explain why it did. It's got to consider. Yes. But here, the oddity is if we applied the same logic to the Purple Book, we'd say, well, you've got to consider it. But the moment then we say they've got to consider it, then the M21 is effective. I mean, the NAS study is effectively now before the board, right? Because they look at it, it says this is what the NAS says. And therefore, if you apply the Overton logic, it just doesn't seem to work in the same way. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't disagree that it works slightly differently. The fact is that this is constructively before the board. We cited in our briefs to at least 306 board decisions in the prior year that referenced the NAS updates. What this does is it will put everyone on notice as to what the expectation for a board member is for when they're confronted with one of these cases. Right now, what we're obviously seeing are very disparate outcomes for similarly situated veterans. So I think in this particular case, as it relates to hypertension and hypertension alone, because that's what's on appeal, we have them discussed in the Federal Register. We have them directed and discussed in the Purple Book, specifically with hypertension and the NAS updates. And we have this individual board member as well as many, many other board members recognizing these NAS updates. This just provides a force of law and will provide that consistency across the board. It seems absurd to think that half the board knows about these updates and the other half doesn't know about these updates.
Thank you.
Further, thank you, Your Honor.
This is Judge Meredith. Could I just follow up on that? National Cancer Reports and whether they're constructively before the board. It seems like it may be a bit circular to rely on something that's not already in the record to say that this issue was reasonably raised or had to have been discussed. Because to show that the report was constructively before the board, it had to be potentially relevant. But how is it relevant if there's nothing else in the record that raised the issue of Agent Orange, the theory of entitlement based on Agent Orange? How do you rely on something not in the record to get it in the record?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, it's been conceded by the VA that Mr. Healy has been exposed to Agent Orange as part of his service in Vietnam, and he has been diagnosed with hypertension. That in itself are the two facts that are necessary to provide what reasonably raises the issue. We know that the board, or we argue that the board is aware of the NAS studies. We argue that this individual board member is aware, and the Purple Book directs the board to this link. And so I think in this case, it is raised because Mr. Healy meets all of those criteria, and the adjudicator had this knowledge, had these documents, these studies, before them, both before Mr. Healy's case and during Mr. Healy's case. Further, Mr. Healy argues, or we argue, that the Secretary has not responded to our contention that the board should have taken official notice of the update's findings. Basically, that the Secretary cannot ignore facts that are of practical relevance to a claim within his expertise and published in the Federal Register. And further, a tribunal learns from its cases, and the board cannot feign ignorance of these facts when you've had hundreds of board decisions that have referenced these NAS updates. Veterans law judges or board members are both experienced attorneys and subject matter experts. And I don't think it's appropriate that they're let off the hook when you have all of these facts that discuss hypertension and herbicide agent exposure. So this court should hold that the NAS updates are part of the record or constructively in the record before the board at the time of its decision. Remand is required for the board, in this case, to obtain a medical opinion as to the relationship between Mr. Healy's hypertension and in-service herbicide agent exposure. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Judge Meredith, do you have any other questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Judge Toth?
Not right now. No. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hennings. We'll hear you on rebuttal. And Mr. Hamill, you can begin when you're ready.
May it please the court. This court's recent decisions have not listed the factors needed to establish constructive possession. In our view, it is a two-part test. First, there has to be knowledge of and possession of the item or document by VA. Second, there has to be a direct relationship between the claim and the item or document. In our case, the first element is satisfied. VA has knowledge of and possession of the NAS updates. However, the second element is missing. There is no direct relationship between the NAS updates and appellant's claim that his hypertension was caused by his treatment for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. A direct relationship means something more than the report generally discusses the same claim for benefits sought by the veteran. The facts of this case most closely align with Monzingo. In Monzingo, the veteran sought to rely on a report regarding the military service and hearing loss that was commissioned in part by the VA at the direction of Congress. The report was not specific to Mr. Monzingo. The report generally discussed hearing loss as it relates to military service, and Mr. Monzingo's claim was for benefits for hearing loss that he asserted was incurred in military service. This court relied on Goodwin and Bowie to conclude that the connection is too tenuous to reasonably support any expectation that the report would be part of the record before the board in every hearing loss or tinnitus claim, or otherwise support a finding that it is deemed constructively part of the record.
Mr. Hamill, this Judge Toth here. So as to the second element, which is, I mean, I guess we could call it the sort of substantive relevance element, you're saying that this nexus, whatever it is, has no relevance because the claim is properly a secondary service connection claim. Did I understand you correctly on that?
Yes, Your Honor. But initially, under Monzingo, it can't just be a general type of report. So our case is similar to Monzingo because the Agent Orange updates are not specific to appellant. But in our case, it's even more attenuated because the appellant in our case has not claimed that Agent Orange is responsible for his hypertension. His
right. I mean, well, if we put aside, like, let's just hypothetically say we all agree the issue is reasonably raised, right? So if we were, let's say, looking at this in the context of a denial of a direct service connection claim, right, we would agree that at least a piece of that analysis is, you know, on the scientific link between herbicide exposure and hypertension, right? And whatever that link is, it's constant among veterans, right? It doesn't vary. Like, the link is, the science doesn't vary one veteran to another, right? And I mean, it makes sense that there's a certain utility to at least VA having a uniform answer to at least this piece of a question of a service member's claim. Does that mean, are you following me?
I am, Your Honor.
Right. So I mean, whether it's actually relevant, I understand the context of this claim, but you know, hypothetically, I mean, there is a certain, this can be relevant to the hypertension claim, generally speaking.
Your Honor, certainly if the veteran had submitted the report, referenced the report, or said something about Agent Orange caused his hypertension, the board would have been obliged to address it.
Okay. So you're saying, so you're fighting the reasonably raised. I mean, basically, if this were a direct service connection claim, if we were to recognize this as a reasonably raised issue, and it really did kind of live or die on this nexus question, then it would be a relevant fact, you know.
Your Honor, I'm making two distinctions. I think it's important to note that in this case, we're different from the other cases because he's not alleging that Agent Orange is involved. And when we talk about the Purple Book is guidance for Agent Orange claims, which this is not an Agent Orange claim. This is a claim that treatment for his non-Hodgkin's lymphoma caused his hypertension. Now, you want to imagine the circumstance that he is making an Agent Orange claim. Even if he were making an Agent Orange claim, Eusebio and Monzingo said you can't use something that just talks about a disability generally and have that put into the record before the board. It's not proper to do that. And one of the reasons why Monzingo addressed the importance of the direct relationship test, they said disregarding the direct relationship test would essentially lead to any reports on diseases or injuries contained in VA libraries being deemed constructively before the board in every case involving a claim from a disease or injury addressed in such reports. Such an application of the constructive possession doctrine places an impossible burden on the board, especially given its obligation to address relevant evidence of record when providing reasons and
basis. But I guess my question is, I mean, is that really the case, right? I mean, insofar as the issue would be somewhat narrow, it's a scientific, you know, as to the nexus between a certain factor and a certain condition, right? You would think, I mean, it would seem to me that having a sort of uniform answer to at least that question would have some utility, as opposed to, I mean, I guess veterans could kind of scour the internet and come up with their own linkage studies and send them in, and board members would have to read those. I don't want to get too far afield, but I mean, the idea that this question would be an element of proof, or at least something in the required facts to prove a case, it suggests that it might have some relevance on the actual question.
Your Honor, I see your point that there could be some utility. My response would be not in this case, given the claim that was raised in this case, and also not based on case law. Eusebio and Monzingo rejected the use of those. So it would require overruling both of those decisions to say that we could take some kind of general study and let all the veterans have the benefit of it. And there's reasons for not allowing that, too. You say there's a utility.
Mr. Hamill, could I just jump in right on that point before you move on? This is Judge Allen. In response to some of your answers to Judge Toth, I just want to make sure I understand VA's position on one point. Your position doesn't vary about the application of the Purple Book in terms of putting something before the board that isn't actually before the board, depending on the nature of the claim. So in other words, you were drawing the distinction that he filed a claim, Mr. Keeley filed a claim only for secondary service connection and didn't mention Agent Orange, okay? Let's just assume that's a valid distinction. Your answer about the impact of the Purple Book doesn't vary depending on whether or not he also had claimed Agent Orange or not, as long as in both those situations he didn't actually submit the NAS study, or does it vary?
Your Honor, our view on the Purple Book is that it's merely guidance. It's a procedural manual that's not binding.
So I just want to make clear then. So the answer to my question is, your position is, it makes no difference. He could have filed a claim that said, I'm seeking service connection for hypertension based on Agent Orange exposure, and that would be treated the same way as the secondary service claim that was made by Mr. Healy in terms of the Purple Book.
Your Honor, treated the same way, I'm not sure how to answer that because.
No, well then, let me make it clear, and then you can answer, right? All I want to know is this. You drew a distinction, which may or may not be factually correct, but let's just say it is, that there was only a claim for secondary service connection here, never mentioned Agent Orange, and it isn't reasonably raised, right? So we have just a secondary service connection claim. If we then had a claim that was direct service connection based on Agent Orange exposure, right? All I'm trying to get, it is not a trick question, all I'm trying to get is, does that distinction matter in your view as a matter of law about whether the Purple Book would make the NAS report constructively before the board if it wasn't actually put before the board?
No, Your Honor, not as a matter of law, no.
Now, I just wanted to be clear about that position because that's important. Because if your position was different, then if we determined that the Agent Orange theory wasn't reasonably raised here, we might never reach the Purple Book question. But now I'm clear about your position, so thank you.
Okay, Your Honor. I would like to actually list six reasons for not expanding the constructive possession in this case. First of all, the facts of the case do not support it. Secondly, probably most importantly, it would be contrary to this court's precedent in Ezebio and Monzingo. Third, it would be a fundamental change to the system established by Congress by shifting the burden to the board to uncover theories to support a claim. Fourth, the consideration of such authorities in all cases would hurt some veterans, because studies like the NAS updates do not find a connection for some diseases. Number five, it places an impossible burden on the board, as stated in Monzingo. And six, there would be no end to the complaints that the board failed to take constructive notice of some study. I would like to address a couple of the criticisms expressed in the Ezebio dissent. First of all, the question of whether the court can peek at what a document says when considering whether it is constructively before the board. The answer is yes. What authority says that? Well, that was what was done in Bell, Goodwin, Monzingo, and Ezebio. There's really no other way the court might decide if there's a direct relationship between a report and a claim without looking at the document. I would equate this to a court having jurisdiction to determine if jurisdiction exists, or to an appellate court resolving a dispute as to the record on appeal. The court can't resolve the dispute without looking at the document for the purpose of resolving the dispute. Second, we cannot agree that it makes sense to have a different standard for reports that fall into a special category that are really important. For a veteran bringing a claim, any report that relates to their claim would be, to them, really important. As for the Agent Orange updates, the VA agrees that they are very important reports as they pertain to policy decisions as to which diseases should be presumptively connected to Agent Orange. But for individual decision-making for veterans who do not have the conditions that are presumptively connected for Agent Orange, these updates do not possess any extra importance, any more so than, say, the report on noise in military service that was at issue in Monzingo, which was a report commissioned in part by the VA at the direction of Congress. As far as defending the inequity to a group of veterans, in the hypothetical presented in the dissent, I would say this to a group of veterans. Congress placed responsibility on individual veterans or claimants to present and support a claim for benefits under 5107. Therefore, a veteran or claimant can present their own evidence for consideration, whether it be a lay statement, medical reports, opinions from private doctors, or compilation of studies like the NAS update. The individual veteran or claimant is allowed to decide what evidence to submit for consideration by VA. There is no requirement that any particular medical authority be considered by VA in every case. This permits each veteran or claimant to support their claim in the manner they desire. Although there may be some large studies like the NES updates that may be helpful to some veterans, they may also be unhelpful to other veterans because they find no evidence to support an association between certain conditions and military service. If a veteran or claimant wants to rely on a report like the NES updates in support of their claim, they can simply submit it to the VA, and the VA must address it.
Whatever Mr. medical... Hamill, could I... This is Judge Allen. Can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
I want to make one point, and then I have a specific question about the Purple Book for you. You should feel free to use your argument time as you want, but I will tell you, as the author of the dissent that you're talking about, it's a dissent, and it doesn't matter because it's not the law. The law is the opinion of the court written by Judge Meredith, and as I've suggested to Mr. Hennings, I see this case is indistinguishable from Azubio. I think Azubio governs. So after you answer my question, feel free to go back talking about the dissent. But as far as I'm concerned, the dissent isn't the law. So are you familiar with a case from the U.S. Supreme Court called Morton versus Ruiz?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
So in Morton, which was a unanimous opinion from the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court said this, quote, where the rights of individuals are affected, it is incumbent upon agencies to follow their own procedures. This is so even where the internal procedures are possibly more rigorous than otherwise be required. So the board adopted the Purple Book, and the provision of the Purple Book that's at issue here is fairly declarative with respect to what should be done, not leaving a lot of room if you just read the rule. So why wouldn't the Supreme Court's language from Ruiz, and the Federal Circuit has cited that case as well, why wouldn't that suggest that the board has essentially bound itself to follow these procedures?
Three reasons, Your Honor. First, the Purple Book is just guidance. It's non-binding. Secondly, it would apply perfectly if this was an Agent Orange claim, and it's not. The section that we're looking at says Agent Orange claims. There was no allegation that Agent Orange caused a disability in this case.
Yes, on that point, though, this is why I asked you earlier, Mr. Hamill, about the Secretary's position. Your position would be exactly the same if it were an Agent Orange claim. Right, you said there was no distinction about the effect of the Purple Book, so that's not really a distinction.
It is in this case, Your Honor, because we're limited to the facts of this case. You can talk hypothetically about another case where it is an Agent Orange claim, but the facts of this case are the claim was that the hypertension was caused by treatment for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so when the Purple Book says Agent Orange claims, that's the section that, even if it were binding or had some lawful effect on the board, it just doesn't apply to the facts of this case. It may be relevant in another case in the future. That would be my response. But the third point I didn't get to was the board members are independent adjudicators, and I don't think we can lose sight of that fact. They don't have to follow the Purple Book. Their job is to independently decide claims, and the Purple Book may give them guidance, but it's really a different situation than looking at whether the M21 manual was followed by VA, by someone developing the claim who is not an independent adjudicator. So because the board is made up of independent judges, and you can't tell them in every case you're going to do a certain thing, they wouldn't be an independent adjudicator of the facts. They may take that in. Yes, Your Honor.
Can I jump in there?
Sure.
Even if it's not binding on the board members, what's said in the Purple Book, why wouldn't there be some obligation for the board member to discuss the relevant provisions? And if they decide they don't want to get an exam, explain why. But why wouldn't there be an obligation to discuss these institutional policies that VA has put in place?
Your Honor, simply because it's a procedural manual that's not binding. These are independent judges who don't have to follow it. So there is no obligation for them. to not, specifically discuss
Judge
a provision.
Meredith, but not, so you don't think that the logic of Overton would apply here, that at a minimum the board would have to discuss a provision if it's potentially relevant in the case?
Your Honor, I believe that Overton discussed that in terms of when the board had already begun addressing provisions of the M21, the board was required to address any other relevant provisions. To the extent that Overton may apply when the board doesn't address the M21 at all, we think that that's still an issue that has yet to be resolved. So in this case, there were no relevant provisions of the Purple Book addressed, and we don't see that that's required, especially under Overton, and because the Purple Book is fundamentally different than the M21, because we're talking about independent adjudicators.
So on the point of, in your view, it's not potentially relevant here, it's two things. So under our case law, the court generally considers a theory of entitlement to have been reasonably raised if there's enough evidence to satisfy the McClendon threshold for triggering an exam. And in the Purple Book, by its own term, it says if a veteran has conceded age and origin exposure and is seeking benefits for a condition that is listed in the category of limited or suggested evidence in the National Academy Court, then VA should get an exam. So is that an acknowledgement by VA that those two factors alone are enough to reasonably raise the issue of the theory of entitlement based on age and origin? And also, I'd point out that the VA here did concede that the appellant had age and origin exposure, and in his substantive appeal, he talked about that he was in Vietnam, he was exposed to Agent Orange, he had other disabilities that the service connected for as a result. So based on those, why would there not be an obligation for VA to have in some fashion discussed those provisions here?
Your Honor, the heading, I think you're looking at the appendix that was submitted with the initial brief. The heading of this whole section, number 4, it's page 115 of the Purple Book, it says Agent Orange claims. So the context of what is required by the Purple Book is in the context of Agent Orange claims. And although this particular veteran had previously made Agent Orange claims, he didn't make an Agent Orange claim in this case and actually got a little bit upset, I think, in one of his notice of disagreements, saying, my complaint is not that the condition is causing my hypertension, it's that the treatment is causing my hypertension. So we have a very specific claim in this case that does not relate to Agent Orange. So this provision from the Purple Book doesn't apply here. So that would
Mr. Hamill, if I can jump in, and then I hope I'm not interrupting Judge Meredith, but it's right on what you just said in response to Judge Meredith's question. Just assume for me that we consider this to be an Agent Orange claim. Just assume for me. Your answer still remains the same to Judge Meredith's question, right? Or is it different?
It's the same, Your Honor. We don't know the impact. It's the Purple Book is non-binding, non-precedential. It doesn't carry any weight of law with the board. They are independent adjudicators. They're not required to discuss them. They're not required to follow them. That is
okay.
Our response.
Then I have a suggestion, and it's just a suggestion, which is we know now your position that this isn't an Agent Orange claim. When we're going to ask you questions about the application of the Purple Book, just assume that your answer can't be, well, that's not an Agent Orange claim, okay, because we understand that's your position. But what we're trying to do is explore the impact of the Purple Book, period. Now, we might not get to that if we determine this isn't an Agent Orange claim, but that's what we're trying to do, okay, because you keep falling back into this, it's not an Agent Orange claim, which then leaves open the question about the impact of the Purple Book. And to follow up, are you familiar with, it's a non-precedential case from the Federal Circuit, Hudick versus Wilkie?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Okay. In Hudick, it involved the M21, in which the board remanded for development of a Thai exposure to Agent Orange claim based on M21 provisions. And then on appeal, of course, the argument was, well, the M21 doesn't apply. And what the Federal Circuit said was, quote, because we conclude the board failed to apply its own internal procedures in adjudicating Hudick's claim, and that error was not harmless, we reverse. So why wouldn't the logic of Hudick, and I understand it's non-precedential, but why wouldn't the logic of Hudick combined with Morton versus Ruiz, the language I read you before from the Supreme Court, suggest that not following the internal procedures is itself something we need to be concerned with?
Your Honor, I would make the distinction between procedure and adjudication. It's one thing if a procedure of VA is not followed, but when it comes to a veterans law judge making a legal determination on a claim, they're not bound by the Purple Book. The Purple Book may set out procedures, but in their decision, they're not required to follow it in arriving at a decision in the case.
This is Judge Toth. I'm sorry to hop in, but so am I understanding you correctly in this respect, which is, you know, there's two aspects to the constructive possession question. The first is the agency control, and the second is the, let's call it the direct relationship, right, the substantive relevance. So I understand your position on the second, which is that this provision is simply not relevant to his claim, which is properly a secondary service connection claim. So I want to focus just on the first element, right, the agency control. So is it your position that the Purple Book, ipso facto, is simply not under the agency's control, such that it would never be mandatory for a board judge to discuss it? Or is it that it is in the control and it would hinge on the second factor, whatever the probative value or the relevance of that provision was to a case? Did you understand my question?
I do, Your Honor. And I'm not sure that I can answer it to your satisfaction. The Purple Book, in our view, is just a procedural manual that's not binding. To the extent that they may need to discuss it in some other case because it's factually applies.
If you don't want to take a full position for the agency right now, that's fine. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I just want to make sure I'm understanding your argument correctly. Like, I understand it completely as to the second factor, whether this may or may not be relevant to the claim as that claim is brought in the facts. If there's broader significance to the agency question, because that's a one-time, one-size-fits-all question, you know, feel free to answer. If not, if you'd like to reflect on it, that's fine.
Yeah, Your Honor, I don't think we have a clear position on in what situations would, if ever, would the board be required to discuss relevant provisions of the Purple Book. In preparing for this oral argument, there was a little bit of discussion about our policy on the Purple Book, and the extent of that was it's a procedural manual that's not binding. And especially in this case, the board was not required to address it. So beyond its application in other cases, I'm really not sure, Your Honor.
Thanks.
Okay. And we only have a few minutes left. But if there are no further questions I do know what I want to cover, Schroeder. So opposing counsel addressed Schroeder. And we think that the interpretation of Schroeder is incorrect. So Schroeder rejected the idea that two different theories equal two separate claims and that the duty to assist attached to one theory but not another. Schroeder did not address whether VA is required to address a particular theory that was not raised by the appellant or the evidence in the first place. And I think it's well settled that the board is not required to consider all possible theories of recovery, where the board is not required to assume the impossible task of inventing and rejecting every conceivable argument in order to produce a result. So to the extent that they're arguing that there needs to be an investigation of all possible in-service causes, we think that the appellant takes Schroeder out of context. And to see that, you can even look at Delisio, which came out 11 years after Schroeder, and it said, in this court said in Delisio, of course, the secretary is not required to raise and investigate all possible theories of service connection for a claim. And if there were no further questions on issue one, I was going to run through my second issue, second and third issues, but due to time constraints, we'll just rely on our brief for the second and third issues. So if there are no further questions, we'd ask that you affirm the decision of the board.
Judge Meredith, do you have anything else?
I do not. Thank you.
Judge Toth?
I don't. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hamill. Mr. Hennings, you can begin your rebuttal when you're ready.
Your Honors, thank you. I just have a few points that I'd like to make in response to the Secretary's counsel. First of all, the standard for the veterans claim is whether the issue is reasonably raised. There's no strict pleading requirement for veterans. So when Secretary's counsel talks about Agent Orange claims, I'm not exactly sure what he means. Rather, it's the Secretary who knows the provisions of Title 38 and can evaluate whether there is potential under the law to compensate another disability. That's what this court held in Ingram. Again, the test is whether something is reasonably raised by the record. And as we discussed in both our brief and in my initial comments, it was reasonably or is reasonably raised by the record because of the constructive possession of the NAS study. Further, in response to Monzingo, Secretary's counsel talked a little bit about that we would be opening the floodgates to and, you know, putting an impossible burden on the board by having every report that's contained in VA libraries be deemed constructively before the board, that this is really too much to ask. But that's not what we have here, Your Honors. The NAS studies in this case regarding hypertension are discussed in the Federal Register. They're discussed in the board's own purple book. They've been cited in hundreds of board decisions, and they were cited by the very board member in Mr. Healy's case just months before. There is a direct relationship between the NAS studies and Mr. Healy's claim. Moreover, this is hardly an obscure report. Holding it was constructively before the board under these facts will not open the floodgates and place an impossible burden upon the board. There is a direct relationship here, Your Honors. We understand that Eusebio controls, and as we outlined in our brief and in my opening argument, we believe that this case is distinguishable from Eusebio and does have a direct relationship. The studies do have a direct relationship to the veterans case. Are there any further questions, Your Honors?
Judge Meredith?
No, thank you.
Judge Toth?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
And I don't have any questions, Mr. Hennings.
Then, in closing, Your Honors, this court should hold that the NAS updates are part of the record and were constructively in the record before the board at the time of its decision. Remand is required for the board to obtain a VA medical opinion as to the relationship between Mr. Healy's hypertension and his in-service herbicide agent exposure. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you to both parties for your helpful arguments this morning and your helpful briefing. And the case is submitted for decision. Thank you.
Court is in recess.